McCarthy Insurance Group, serving the community for over 70 years. For home, farm, motor, life, health and business insurance, log on to mig.ie or free phone 1-800-50-1111. Probably your best call in 2024. Charles McCarthy Insurance is trading as McCarthy Insurance Group is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.
Now, real people, real opinions, Nighttime Talk.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
Dahi Flannery has a master's in philosophy and is about to embark on a PhD in that field. And recently he started a podcast. It's called Philosophicary. I'm going to speak to Dahi in a second as to why he makes these as difficult to pronounce. It's one word I just can't get out of my mouth properly. Philosophicary. Where he approaches conversations with the three C's of thinking, critique, creativity and care. The podcast is doing extremely well on the Irish charts, and he joins me on the line now to give us a little lesson in philosophy. And what is it? How do we use it in our daily lives? And what's it all about, man? Anyway, Dahi, hi, how are you?
I'm good, Niall. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Why is philosophy just such a hard word to get out of your mouth?
it's a hard word to get out of your mouth, Niall. It doesn't seem to come out of mine, okay. But the philosophicary, okay, I added a few things there.
Yeah.
The whole idea was, you know, philosophy, the word itself means love of wisdom or knowledge. It comes from the ancient Greeks.
Yeah.
And I put the ekery on because that's kind of an Irish twist. So
yeah, it's kind of so Irish
love
twist.
Love of wisdom, knowledge, and crack. You know, that's what the ekery is supposed to represent, a bit of crack.
Are Irish people, are we, you know, philosophers? Do we critically think in this country, or we just go straight for jugular? I mean, do we actually sit down and deep think about things properly?
Well, I think there's many that do. I mean, the truth, I started out life and still am a working man. You know, I worked on building sites and factories for like 20 years before I ended up going back to education. But I always like to think about these big questions and as you said, think deeply on these questions. Mm. And I did find people would talk to me on building sites and in factories, you know, about these things. And I had some very good and long conversations over an 8-hour shift on a assembly line, you know, with people about things that were deep. So I think we do. And I think we have a tradition in Ireland, a tradition of writers and a tradition of artists and bards and poets. And all these things are based on deep thinking, really.
Yeah,
I mean?
Like that with I have a good friend, and we ask each other the most ridiculous questions. Like, he rings me randomly today, and he says, you know Newton's law? And I'm going, yeah. And he says, what propels light? He said, and I'm going, you know, most mates ring up their friends and go, how's things today? You know what I mean? This is not, and then we end up with this deep conversation about the speed of light and what propels light and would a tennis ball stop if you threw it into space and all this kind of stupid stuff. But I suppose, yeah, the big philosophical questions in life, I know because we ask them on the show, I would often say to the producer, let's throw out a philosophical question because they always work well. Do you believe in God? Like, it's a good philosophical question, right? You know, what's the meaning of life? What's the purpose of life? Are they the main kind of questions? Like, throw us a few more there. We could probably use them on the show. You know, those philosophical questions that people ask all the time.
Well, what we like to say is a philosophical question is a question that doesn't really have an answer. It's a question that you can't ask Google. So maybe that question your friend asked you about what propels life, that might be a question for a physicist or for Google. So it's not, there might actually be an answer to that that can be measured.
We tried to Google it.
So,
there's a million different answers. Yeah.
but a philosophical question would be more about concepts. So when you say, do you believe in God? That's almost a personal question to somebody about their personal beliefs. Is God real? Mm. That might be a different question.
Okay, so it's how you word the question is more important, I suppose. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Well, philosophy seems to look more to the question than the answer a lot of the time.
You know, right, okay.
It seems to just work on improving the questions.
Okay, well, we need to get this guy to produce the show. I mean, he come up with some really good questions for us because I always talk about how we word a question is the most important thing to get a reaction on the show.
It is.
Yeah, absolutely. So that question, for example, you know, is God real? Does God exist? Rather than asking, do you believe in God? Because that then questions your faith. So, yeah, is God real? I mean, do you ever... Well, you're saying you won't get an answer to that question. Does that not drive people bonkers then? Because, you know, because there's so many thoughts on it.
It drives us bonkers, but what drives us more bonkers, I think, is certainty. I think even in society as we're at now, I was listening to you talking beforehand, and there's so much certainty going on around the place. But they're really philosophical questions about what's the right thing to do. So we don't really have the right to be as certain as we are about a lot of the things that we're arguing over, you know. But it is good to talk about things, and it is even finding a way to frame the question seems to give people some solace, if not give them the full answer. It gives them a way to go deeper into their inquiry. You know, we used to, when I was in university here in Galway, we were doing a program called P4C, where we were bringing philosophy into schools, into children, and we would teach them what a philosophical question was. Then we'd give them a concept, and then we would give them some sort of stimulus, and they would form a question.
Okay.
And then we'd inquire about that question, and we could spend a couple hours inquiring about that question. They all thoroughly enjoyed it, and I really genuinely think that it might not have improved their knowledge, but it improved their inquiring skills. You know, next time they came to a question they couldn't find an answer to, they had a better way of framing the question, so they might get closer to an answer.
Yeah, as I mentioned already, that's always the way this show works the best. You could ask a question, for example, on this show, like, do we have free will? And it's the way you frame that question, which is also a philosophical question to some degree. It's the way you Absolutely. Frame that question, right? So, you know, You could ask it many different ways, and many different ways you'll get a completely different answer, or you get a different reaction on the show, or it will encourage people to call in. And I've always been of the mindset with all of the producers that I've ever had over the last God knows many years, that there can only be one question. So when you read out a topic, or say it was that last one there about going to Australia, the husband going off to Australia, whatever, you know, what should he do? So that's the question. If you start loading it with other questions and showing, do you think the wife is, you know, wrong? Do you think that the mother-in-law is acting up? What happens is you confuse the audience. So you confuse people when you start to change the question or change the angle of the question. So where does philosophy come into our day-to-day lives? I mean, does it come into our day-to-day lives?
It absolutely comes into our day-to-day lives, because we're actually living within the philosophical ideas of people of the past, you know. So what we take for granted now, the kind of ontology we live in, the existence we have, that what we think is real, like you said, the idea of free will, the idea that we have free will, the idea that there's a self, they're all conclusions that philosophy has come to along the years, and they've come into society, and then we've built a society upon these ideas.
So like the idea is created by Aristotle and Socrates and Karl Marx and all of these people. They've basically molded the world around us.
They kind of have. The story about a man standing beside a pond and two fish swim up. And the man says, "How's the water?" And the fish look at him and they swim away, and they look at each other and say, "What's he on about water? What's water?" That's kind of how philosophy is that it really is embedded in our very being. We just don't recognize it, you know.
It's like a mate of mine. I remember years ago, a mate of mine moved to Marbella, and he was an estate agent over there. And I was over visiting him one time, and I said to him, "You know what? Like, do you like it over here?" He goes, "I said, what's the main difference?" He says, "Nobody mentions the weather." And I went, "Right." So it's, you know, that Irish thing of nice day today, isn't it? He said, "Because it's a nice day every day." I suppose let's look at those other philosophical questions that you would normally ask. You know, is the universe real? You know, what's infinity? You know, why is there something rather than nothing? All of those kind of questions that are out there that we'll never get answers to. Are they the ones that you kind of study when you're doing your PhD or when you were studying?
No, not really. We don't study them big questions exactly. We do study, there's so many different strands of philosophy. You know, so so I'm hoping to go into the study of language and what language tells us about being human. As in, maybe language makes up the entirety of our rationality. Maybe language is actually working on humans rather than humans are using language, you know?
Well, we're getting told a lot how to use our language, aren't we, lately? I mean, that's something that I never noticed in kind of 50 years of my life, but certainly in the last 10 years of my life, you know, we're being told you can't use that word or you can't use those words. No, that upsets people. You can't say that. You know, or you have to word it this way to make it sound nicer. So we're kind of being told how to change. We're changing language a lot lately.
We are changing language, but language has always changed. It's always changed, and it's only when we started writing it down that it actually kind of became codified, you know, in a certain way into the English language. Before that, you can imagine language was different from one village to the next. Only slightly different, but language has always changed and evolved. So the fact that we're changing it now for the times, and because we're perhaps developing our morality up to another level, perhaps that we need the language to follow, and because it's been codified, we have to change the codification. If it was 600 years ago, we wouldn't need to change the codification. We just need to change what we say.
Yeah, I just call it virtue signaling. That's what I call it. A lot of it is quite virtuous nowadays as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. The thing about virtue was Aristotle's gig, you know. And the thing about virtue is, a virtuous, according to Aristotle, virtuous person doesn't do things for the sake of being virtuous. They do things because they just are virtuous. You know, if they're doing it for the sake of being virtuous, then that's not virtuous. So virtue signaling, despite its name, is not virtuous, really.
No, you know? It's kind of acting, really, isn't it? It's following a cult, usually.
It is of sorts, is. It absolutely is.
And where is the connection, or is there a connection between religion and philosophy? I mean, is there a connection? Because obviously each religion has a way of thinking, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there is huge connections between religion and philosophy. I just recorded a podcast with a Chinese lady called Lexi, and we talked about Taoism, Confucianism, and Buddhism, and how those kind of streams of thought differ.
Yeah.
And how they build up the ontology, the water that the Chinese swim in, for want of another word, you know, and the ideas that, the ideas that we live in, they come from the Judeo-Christian religion. You know, Nietzsche was probably the first one to really make this a big point, is that our good and bad, our ideas of good and bad, basically come from the Judeo-Christian religion, you know. So really, religion is absolutely part of that water that we swim into, along with philosophy.
I'm assuming you spoke about Confucius to her quite a lot.
I did speak to her about Confucius, because that's kind of become the dominant one in China at the moment. But also Taoism and Buddhism, and how they have three different approaches. In the West, the main aim of our kind of philosophy, of our ontology, if you want, is human well-being. It's kind of a utilitarian calculation that the most good for the most people. In the Asian philosophies, what they aim at is more a harmony between humans, the earth, and the heavens. Now, the heavens aren't the same as what we think of the heavens in the Judeo-Christian religion tradition. Mm. The heavens are basically the powers of nature, the forces of nature that we have no control over. So the three philosophies, Buddhism aims at getting this harmony by finding the harmony of a self with a self. So it's about finding harmony within yourself. Taoism is about individual humans finding harmony with the patterns of nature. So they find harmony with the patterns of nature, and that's how they create the harmony between those three elements. And Confucianism is about harmony between people. So Confucianism is big on rituals and things like this, that people should act accordingly, and they have lots of duties and obligations to the whole, to the entire community. So Confucianism kind of fits what's happening in China at the moment.
And which philosophy in general has the best purpose to life? Because we're always, as human beings, wondering what our purpose is. And it, by the way, I think it's really odd that we know we're going to die from the day we're born. We're dying from the day we're born, right? We're constantly dying. And we know we're going to die. And it's the most tragic event in our lives. And yet we have an ability not to think about it, generally speaking, unless it comes to our doorstep. So we then travel, you know, we're going through this 80 years of our lives in general with little or no purpose. And yet we don't, that doesn't seem to bother us. But if it was any other walk of life, if there was no purpose to our job or if there was no purpose to our marriage or no purpose to our children, we'd have a concern about it. But yet the most important thing is our life, which has little or no purpose. And yet we're quite happy to be just part of this little journey of 80 years. So I'm wondering which philosophy has the best purpose or meaning to life, or the best answers, or if there's even an answer to the meaning of life. Apart from, obviously, you know, the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
You can think of it like each person can find their own philosophy, and they can find it through asking them types of questions. What is the meaning to life? Perhaps the meaning to life is searching for meaning to life.
Mm.
That's a possibility too. And perhaps that's why all these religions and philosophies and everything has sprung up. I don't agree with Elon Musk that the reason for being is so that we can go and conquer outer space. I don't think them things are the meaning or the purpose of humanity.
I wouldn't agree, no.
You know?
Yeah. I think that's exciting, by the way. But I certainly don't believe it's the meaning to life.
No, or our purpose. It's exciting, and they're exciting movies, but we've more important things here on Earth to be doing before we try to do them things. Maybe we should, if we spent our time finding a way to make a propulsion system that didn't burn the Earth, and then we could maybe go and find out what's happening in space. I think Elon Musk thinks we have to go to space, but not just we have to go to space, he has to go to space. It has to be him. You know, there's a bit of a egotism.
It's a bit of selfishness. Yeah, there's a bit of selfishness about the whole thing. Mind you, it's his money. He can do what he wants with it, I suppose, to some degree. I mean, the podcast itself, by the way, you mentioned one of the podcasts. Give us an idea of the other kind of stuff that you would talk about on the podcast, because it sounds really interesting, and I must actually have a listen now. I know it's in the podcast charts and does really well. I hope it's going well for you. I mean, what else would you be talking about, or what sort of guests do you have on?
Okay, well, I'll start with my first guest, and to be honest, it's not doing extremely well, but that's fine. If it never does well, I'd be very happy I did it. You know, there's an intrinsic worth to it for me.
Don't blow it here now. Don't play yourself down. There's a bit of philosophy involved in telling people it's doing really well, okay?
Okay. Well, I'll start with my first guest, Tom. And Tom had a big part in convincing me to do this podcast. I knew Tom for about a couple of years, and then we were having a discussion about the Berlin Wall, and whatever, I was waxing lyrical, and Tom said, "That's not how it happened." And I said, "Well, blah, blah, blah." He said, "No, it's not how it happened, Dahi. I was there." And then I started talking more deeply to Tom and taking more attention. And Tom was a cameraman for a war reporter, and he traveled the world for like 20 plus years, going to places when really exciting things were happening, and going to war zones. He was in Somalia when crazy things were happening, and he was there when the Duma was being bombed by tanks, and he's some interesting things on the podcast to say about that. So Tom came on and he had some very interesting things to say, but he's basically giving a perspective of people in other parts of the world, you know, and I think that's important. I think here in the West, again, we have that certainty thing. So I like to give perspectives from other people that we maybe don't think of. And Tom was a great man for that, because there's very few people that have the experience that Tom has. So he was great for that. And then the second person I brought on was a chap called Liam Cullinan. Liam was a French foreign legionnaire. He left Galway when he was just a teenager. Now, many people have left Galway when they were teenagers to join the Legion, but Liam actually succeeded.
Yeah.
And he finished in his top 10, and he got to choose his group, and he was in the special services, or the top line of it anyway.
Yeah.
He finished his career, and he was in Scotland. He was about to become a commercial diver when he got struck down by meningitis.
Wow.
At a very young age. the doctors were saying to his brothers and his family to put him in a home. He's done, basically forget about him. But they didn't. He damaged his cerebellum, which is the motor cortex at the back of the brain, which, as he explains himself, it's like the conductor of the orchestra. So everything was working except the conductor was down, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But Liam now lives independently in Galway. He has to put an immense amount of concentration into just taking a step. But yet he walks every day. He can be seen walking around the town. He's always got a smile for people. He's got a fantastic attitude to life. And to me, that's something worth delving into. To me, that, and he's also in amazing shape. And for a man who can't move as much as the rest of us, I want to figure out how he did that too, But
Interesting person, because, you know, when your chips are down, you know, and everything, you know, I suppose particularly when you've done so well and achieved so much in life, to be taken down at an early point in your life back to basics and stripped back to basics as a human being again. And the only thing you have left really for a point is your mind and your thoughts.
Yeah.
You know, it's very, very difficult. And for to get through that, you know, takes strength, a lot of strength.
It takes strength. He's an amazing person. It's an amazing story, really, he has to tell. So I'm very happy to be part of sharing.
Yeah, you're telling me a podcast isn't doing well. I'm listening to you. I don't know how it's not doing well. These sound like great stories. Give us another one.
Had a guy called Dan Leon. Dan is a neuroscientist, philosopher, psychologist. And we talked about moral bioenhancement. I have had many conversations with Dan about this. Moral bioenhancement. So basically, Dan thinks that, or argues that, it would be good if we could enhance people's moral decision-making by enhancing them biologically. So whether that's taking a tablet or getting a microchip put in or whatever it is, he thinks it's possibly a good idea to do that.
Sounds like the movie Limitless. Do you remember the movie Limitless?
Yeah, it does. Except these are moral questions. So making people good people.
Yeah, but what's good? See, here's the philosophical.
That's exactly my point.
I think me and you would differ on opinions on certain things, because I'm getting to know you very quickly, right? And I think we would differ on opinions. Now, I'm not going to get it. It could be things like climate change. It could be things like immigration, whatever. We would differ on opinions.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think we'd respect each other's views, right? But here's the thing. Who's morally right, me or you? And that comes down to just what side of the argument you happen to be on, doesn't it, really?
It does, absolutely. And I definitely think we get our morality mostly from the story that we live in. Again, from words, you know.
We get our morality from Christianity. Now, I'm not a Christian. I don't even believe in God. But I believe I've got my morals from my family, from my mother and father. My father was a very Christian man. And I've probably got my morals from them, because I think I have very good Christian values, even though I'm not a Christian or I'm not a Catholic or I don't believe in God. So I think that comes back to the previous question about religion. We do get our morals from religion, don't we?
I think eventually, if you go back and back and back like that, we do get our morality from religion, or good and bad. I think the genesis of it is in religion. I do, but again, Dan's argument was that we don't, was that it can be taken down to kind of neuronal structures in our brain, and that if we change that, people will make good decisions. And I think that sounds all very much like Nazi eugenics.
Just kind of sound a bit like
argument.
That.
If the Nazis had this and their version of morality, and they were able to get everybody on side, then perhaps that would be a bad idea. But Dan has some very good arguments.
See, I understand the point that he's making. Maybe there's a tablet that would make you energetic, make you a better critical thinker, and all of that. That'd be good. But a tablet that tells you or decides morally how you should think or on the right side, I still come back to, what is the right side? There's no definition of having good morals. Everybody's morals are different. There's no rules as you have to have the same morals. We all don't have to have the same morals. I had an argument with a guy on the show one night. I said, if somebody was drowning, would you save them? And he said, no. Why would I risk my life for somebody else? And I said, because it's the right thing to do, isn't it? He said, why is it the right thing to do? He said, just because you believe it's the right thing to do. And I go, okay. And I took the point on board, right? So morally, yeah, we thought completely different. He believed he was right. I believed I was right. Whereas your guest believed there's a certain way, my way, obviously, is the right way, morally.
Yeah. That's a pretty good assumption of what he said. Yeah, he basically, that's it. He has to have the rule book to say what morals are good and bad before you start making people morally good. He makes arguments now, like if you can increase pro-social behaviour, then that's good.
Yeah.
You know, and things like that. And it is good, but...
it's like an Aryan race.
But at the same time, if we'll say 100 years ago in Ireland, the English had the ability to make us all pro-social, would that not just make us too passive to rise up
I think we are too passive. I think we are. So, I think the Irish are quite passive people. I think we're changing a little bit, but I think we are very passive. You know what I mean? I think we take an awful lot. I mean, look at the country at the moment, for example. You know, there is a sense that the government are not listening to the people, generally speaking. And yet people, you get the odd protest every now and again. You know what I mean? But nothing, you know. And I mean, I'm all in favour of large protests, as long as they're peaceful, of course. I'm all in favour of large protests. But we don't do that too often. I think social media has ruined protesting. People think they do their bit on social media. That's all they have to do. By the way, just get about yourself, because I've only got about 5 minutes left here. You're hoping to do a PhD. What are you hoping to do the PhD in, by the way?
I'm hoping to do the PhD in philosophy, of course, and it'll be around language and environmental issues.
Yeah.
Okay. So it will be about how... You know, humans seem to see the rest of nature as just material there that's waiting for us to come along and change it into something else.
Yeah.
But there's actually an intrinsic worth in the rest of nature that we perhaps don't take account of in the ontology and the water that we swim on now, you know. Yeah. And I'd like to at least make the argument that we can change that.
Well, listen,
that we can change that background.
Dahi, I could talk to you for hours. We could have a great conversation. Your podcast sounds great. People should go and listen to it. You can pronounce
it. It's philosophicary. P-H-I-L. I can't spell it.
P-H-I-L-O-S-O-P-H-E-C-K-E-R-Y. Philosophicary. There you go. I got it out three times.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, and it's in the usual places, I assume. It's on, you know, iTunes and Spotify and all that. I hope you're making a bit of money out of it. Are you making any money out of it?
No, not yet. It's on YouTube. People want to find that, and it'll be on all them other places soon.
You need to get it onto all those other places. There's your problem.
That's my problem right there.
I'll tell you what, I have your number. I'll give you a ring tomorrow and I'll tell you how to do it. We'll sort it all out for you, right?
Okay. I'd love that, Niall. That'd be great. Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. Listen, thank you very much indeed. It's on YouTube. People want to go and find it. Dahi, thank you very much indeed.
Now, real people, real opinions, Nighttime Talk.
Ireland's classic hits radio.